The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
And welcome to the program here on a Tuesday, Thanksgiving week, pretty much here. See people everywhere getting ready for the holidays, and we hope you'll stick around with us for the next 4 hours because we have a lot to share with you. Let's get started with some headlines. And Greg Sankey, in a poignant interview with the Orlando Sentinel, just talked about how tough things have been, but that the finish line is near. And what he and everyone else has been dealing with is the pretty obvious, as we were heading out of here yesterday, changes for this week's schedule. We hope it stays this way. No guarantee, though. Arkansas, Missouri, postponed. Tennessee, Vanderbilt, likely to be replayed on December 19th. That's my opinion, not anyone else's. Vandy will play Mizzou. That game was postponed. And, you know, one thing that's interesting that you have to consider here, once the combatants for the SEC championship game are finalized, and that will probably happen this weekend, then you can start moving games to the 12th and the obviously December 19th. It makes it easier. So keep that in mind. Right now, you're not seeing a lot of announcements for that reason. You will soon. Meanwhile, talk about great news. Heisman candidate a few weeks ago, Kyle Pitts has been hurt. He's back. And I don't want to say the Gators need him, but the Gators are going to be better with him. Glad to see him back. Meanwhile, Egg Bowl, usually on Thanksgiving. And I kind of miss that it's not going to be on Thanksgiving this year, but it will be Saturday afternoon, and Mike Leach is ready for an incredibly intense. You don't see those words back-to-back very often. John Adams calling for a change. Not the president, John Adams, but the Pope, John Adams, the Pope of Knoxville. He'll be with us later on. And here's why he wants a change. Garantano, who has been the favorite of Jeremy Pruitt, 0-5, touchdowns for interceptions. He's doing well there, if you think that's good news. Pretty much everything is coming apart for him. And this is the night, a couple of weeks later than usual, but the first CFP is coming out. And I can tell you right now, Alabama will be number one in the country. This last time the AP really matters. Alabama, Notre Dame, Ohio State are pretty obviously going to be 1-3. It wasn't Heather Dinich, or was it? No, it was Andy Staples yesterday who said he wouldn't be surprised to see A&M in the top four. But remember, Florida has Alabama later on. Cincinnati has big games. Cincinnati's will also be one to keep your eye on. So that's tonight, exactly 4 hours from now. What are we going to do until you flip over and watch the CFP rankings? We're going to entertain you. And we start with Brandon Marcello. He'll be with us in a couple of minutes. John Adams, Stephen M. Smith, and Jackie Sherrill, legendary coach at both A&M and Mississippi State. He'll be with us to talk about a special documentary tonight. Always great to talk to him. Always. And why don't we start with your calls. Hugh starts it off in Deep Gap, hello, North Paul. Carolina. Hey, Hugh.
I got something I want to talk to you about. Last Friday, four of us drove down to Greensboro to do a golf round. The last day, we'd probably have green Bermuda grass. And two of the young men I was with, they're young men in their 60s, were former high school football coaches. And we got into a discussion about Coach Saban breaking the code about why some teams win and why some don't, and it has to do with whether or not you have your offense clicking. And it was amazing. We got to going down the list with Will Muschamp and Jeremy Pruitt and Kirby Smart and Mark Stoops, Les Miles, all of these defensive gurus who cannot change their value system to get in step with the new rules as they exist that greatly benefit offense and penalize defense. I mean, you got new coaches in the league, Kiffin and Mullen, Pittman, Finkel, and Drinkwitz, and then Hugh Freeze and Neil Brown in Cincinnati and West Virginia that are offense gurus and doing great. Here's the thing. We got to talking about how long Doug Atkins or Dick Butkus or Lawrence Taylor, how much salary they'd have left after being fined for foul hits or illegal hits on offensive players. I got to tell you, unless a football team has leadership at the top that intuitively understands how to build competitive offense today, you're spinning your wheels. I don't care how great they were 10 years ago, that is not today's game. And I think Coach Saban nailed it exactly for what it is. That's it, Paul.
Well, Hugh, thank you. Great to have you on, and appreciate that very much. How about Jeremy up next? Hey, Jeremy, welcome to the program.
Hey, Paul, I talked to you probably four or five times this year, and every time it's been about the same thing, and it's not going to change today. Todd Grantham, I think he's got to go. What do you think?
Why do you think he has to go?
Well, we gave up only 17 points, and that's not too bad to Vanderbilt. One thing, he was a freshman quarterback, and he came out there and drove down the field effortlessly. We looked out of place so many different times. I mean, the subbing is atrocious. I don't think it's going to look good in Atlanta.
Well, Todd Grantham has been he's been an SEC defensive coordinator. This is, I believe, his third stop, stayed in Georgia, the other two.
I think there's several different better candidates out there than him.
Okay. Well, I'll pass that along to Coach Mullen, and maybe we can make a change before the game this weekend. Ron is up next in Florida. Hey, Ron, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mr. Feinbaum, how are you doing?
Ron, we're doing great. Thank you. Ron, you there?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, well, go right ahead.
I got a question concerning Justin Fields.
Okay.
Everybody's putting down Jake Fromm about how bad he was and couldn't take him to the big game. Well, it seems like these Ohio State quarterbacks are doing a heck of a job up in Big Ten country, but once they get to the pros, they kind of fade away. You know, J.T. Barrett's in the spring league, and Dwayne Haskins isn't doing much. I was just wondering what your feeling is on Justin Fields and if he'll make it to the next step.
Yeah, you know, the two guys you just mentioned are the main reason that Joe Burrow went to LSU. As far as Justin Fields, I think he's a great quarterback. He's probably the most talented athlete in the country. But yeah, you have to remember the circumstances. Jake Fromm had been there. He'd won the job as a freshman. And Justin Fields never quite got a shot. But you don't always know what you have, just like with Joe Burrow. It's a tough call. Kirby Smart made the call he felt like he needed to make. You can argue if it was the wrong call or not. They're still looking for a quarterback at UGA. Anyway, let's check in with Matt, who is in San Antonio. Hey, Matt.
How you doing today, Mr. Paul Feinbaum, my friend?
Matt, I'm doing well. Thank you.
I want to talk about those LSU Tigers, how they can get their butts whipped when they come to Kyle Field, Mr. Paul Feinbaum.
Well, you don't like those Tigers, do you?
No, I do not like those LSU Tigers. Every year they talk smack about my Aggies, saying they're going to beat us, they're going to beat us. Yeah, they really suck this year, don't they? When they come home to the 12th man this year, I got to say those LSU Tigers. You got to lose by at least 48 points, at least 59 points to us. Revenge is coming, LSU. Payback sucks.
Man, Matt is fired up. Anyway, why don't we head to a break? Give everybody a chance to calm down here. We'll talk to Brandon Marcello in a short period of time. More of your phone calls as well at 855-242-7285. We are off and running here on a Tuesday.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Hey, we welcome you back here on a Tuesday. WT is in Arkansas and you are on the air. Hello, WT.
Paul, I was just wanting to call today and ask you a few questions about the game on Saturday against LSU. And I was just thinking, a lot of Razorback fans call me crazy, but I was wondering if you thought that there were some questionable play calls by Kendall Briles on Saturday. We didn't convert a single third down. I thought that was a little bit crazy. I feel like we get screwed by the referees every game. It's been like that for the past few years. Anyway, that's all. I'll hang up and listen. Thank you very much for letting me on the show.
Yeah, thanks for the call. I mean, the officiating question keeps coming up, and I get it. But I call me naive, but I still struggle to think that these things are any more than happenstance. I've never met an official yet who did anything other than call the game the best way they can. I know nobody wants to hear that, but until someone can show me some intent other than, hey, we always get screwed every time we play, I will keep giving you the same answer. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's check in with Dave, who is up next in Florida. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing this afternoon?
I am well. Thank you.
Good. Hey, I wanted to throw something out there and not to stir up the muddy waters that are pretty muddy right now, and we're getting closer and closer to the end of the regular season. You got a lot of teams out there that have played a fairly full schedule. Obviously, Ohio State's not one of them, but I want to get your opinion, and maybe it's two-folded, maybe it's three-folded, but if you look at the current top 10 and you see Alabama up there at number one, 7-0, Notre Dame 8-0, Ohio State 4-0, which is my biggest dilemma right there, with them only playing half the games that some of these top-tier teams have played. How do you see the top four really panning out if Notre Dame rematches with Clemson and would happen to lose, would give them a one loss, and just assume that Alabama wins outright, which would give Florida a second loss? In Ohio State, assuming that they went out without the number of games that have been played, would you feel comfortable having Alabama, Notre Dame, Clemson in there in Ohio State and leaving out some of those teams like BYU or even Cincinnati, although I don't give Cincinnati a stone, toss across the pond. But how do you feel about the top four panning out in that manner?
Yeah, Dave, I think ultimately it really matters how many games Ohio State plays. I would say if there's a school in the country that could ill afford another missed game, it would be them. Because, I mean, they look good now. They've got a lot of criticism for the win over Indiana, but that was a good team they played. And I'm one that grades on the curve. I want to see the quality of the opposition. I don't care what you look like against a bad team. I care what you look like against a good team. So if they keep playing, they'll obviously have Michigan, pretty mediocre team, I think. And then Northwestern, they need Northwestern to be undefeated. Now, let me ask you this question. What happens if Northwestern wins out and then beats Ohio State? Would you put them in the playoff?
That is absolutely a question that I didn't think I would get thrown at me. But given the state that the Big Ten is in right now, and you're talking about the Power Five teams, I would have to give it at least a slight consideration. I don't know what the eye test would do, but right now they're playing good football. And if they can beat Ohio State and pull that off, I would say that would be one for the record books.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much. Interesting call there. Let's go to Jackson, who is calling next. Hey, Jackson, you're on the air. Maybe not. Jackson, you there?
Yeah.
How about Ibrahim in Missouri? Hey, Ibrahim.
Yeah, hello.
Hey there.
Hey, how's it going? I wanted to throw this scenario at you, kind of. I've been thinking about a possibility of, so I'm a Florida Gators fan, and looking like they're going to match up with Alabama in the SEC championship. If Florida were to go on and beat Alabama and have Alabama with a one loss and Florida with as an SEC champion, and then Clemson would avenge their loss to Notre Dame in a close ACC championship, could you see a possibility of a two SEC and two ACC college football playoff?
Wow, that is such an interesting situation. Back to what the caller said a minute ago about Ohio State. Yeah, Ibrahim, I don't know at that point how you leave anyone out of that group, because they've all played really top-notch teams, and that could be a real problem for Ohio State. I haven't really thought that deeply about that, but yeah. I think Alabama, short of losing by 50 points to Florida, is going to get in the playoffs as long as it, beats obviously Auburn in Arkansas and LSU. Now, Clemson went to Notre Dame, lost in double overtime without their best player. They come back and beat Notre Dame. I mean, Notre Dame might be a little bit vulnerable, but then I think it would come down to a Notre Dame versus Ohio State conversation.
Yeah, because I could see, with all Ohio State could go undefeated, and then in that scenario, do you leave out an undefeated Ohio State team with, a week in Big Ten this year?
And that's why,
compared to the
risk of sounding sacrilegious here by talking about college football in this way, I wouldn't pay a lot of attention to what you see tonight, because remember, in these rankings, you're not going to get the benefit of Florida having played Alabama, nor of Clemson playing Notre Dame again. So you have Florida playing the number one team, Clemson playing the number two team. And, I mean, nobody is going to be able to trump that the rest of the way.
Yeah, I just thought that'd be plays out that way.
That's why I don't think the argument for Cincinnati is going to go very far.
Yeah, I don't see that going either.
I mean, it's a great argument, and a lot of people like to make it, and BYU's good, but Cincinnati and BYU just don't have
the mirrors.
They're not going to have anything remotely close to that. Papa Louie is up next. Hey, Papa.
Hey, I'm on.
Go right ahead.
Can you hear me, Paul?
I sure can.
Hey, I was just going to ask you guys on the SEC, whenever they choose crews for these games, do they already have those pre-assigned before the season starts? Because this is the second time we had that same crew because, you know, we had them with Auburn, and then we got them this past Saturday. And I don't know, is there a – and do they grade the referees or – you know, so that they play in the bigger and more important bowls, or
of course,
or do they just randomly choose?
Let me explain.
I'm not sure how that works. Do you?
The every single there is a supervisor for every single group, and then there's a supervisor of officiating, and you better believe those officials are graded every single week. They're graded on every play that they call, and
yeah.
The best officials advance. Those who get and that you have to remember one thing about officiating crews. There are conflicts. So if the head official went to Alabama, he's not going to be able to call the Alabama game. So you have to factor that in. Sometimes you end up with the same crew because other crews can't do certain games. But the best officials usually work their way through. And then at the end of the season, they'll either do a championship game, or they may end up being asked to do a bowl game, or even the CFP if they're not if they don't have a conflict.
Okay. So, all right. Well, I was just curious about that. The second thing I wanted to ask is on the top four player or top four teams. Instead of having just four. And I know it's going to come up. Why don't they extend the number of teams? And that would end everybody's questions. Have they decided on that in the future, you think?
Well, here's the deal. They have a 12-year contract. I think it's a 12-year contract. And they're about at the midpoint of that. May not be. It's either 8 or 10, 8 or 12. I can't remember which one it is. So they determined they were going to have a 14 playoff. They have already said at some point they'll re-examine it, but they're not in a big hurry to, because you know, everything is tied in to the CFP. You have the semifinals usually on January 1st, not always, sometimes on December 31st, sometimes last year I think they were on the 28th or 9th, and then the championship game is always set. So you just can't say, okay, we're going to add four more. I think the model that I've seen used more often is If they were ever to expand, you would add four more. Therefore, you'd give the Power Five conferences all the champion would get in the playoff, and then you would probably get a group of five and then two at large. But nothing's going to change this year. More to come. Brandon Marcello will join us next. Get his picture of the college football playoff ranking tonight and some other things as we continue.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
And we welcome you back. Great to have all of you here on the Tuesday before. Brandon Marcello joining us, and it's always interesting to get his perspective because he covers the big picture of college football. And Brandon, let's talk about the biggest issue facing everyone right now, and that's finding a way to get games on the board in a health and safe manner, and getting to the end of the season, which doesn't look as easy as it once did.
No, and you know, obviously when we talk about sports reflecting life, and that's exactly what's happening right now nationally with the rise in COVID-19 cases. It's affecting all our communities, and it's creeping into the football programs as well. And you know, these last 3 weeks we've had increased cancellations and postponements each of the last 3 weeks. Obviously, we're in a spot right now where the numbers haven't risen as far as postponements and cancellations, but Wednesday is always a big day coming up, and it's going to be interesting to watch. But when it comes to the SEC, the good thing is that they're getting a lot of games in. They lead the nation right now in average games played at 7.6 right now by my count among the 14 teams. The issue is out west with the Pac-12, where obviously they've had a lot of cancellations and postponements. They're trying to figure things out. Utah just opened its season last week because of cancellations. It's an interesting time, but what's good for these conferences that haven't played a lot of games, particularly the Pac-12 and even the Big Ten, is that the top teams that we believe would be the top teams entering the year are just that. And Ohio State's the class of the Big Ten, and no one seems to be able to catch up with them. And in the Pac-12, it's USC and Oregon. It's just a matter of, can they get enough games on their resume in the Pac-12 to maybe be considered for the playoff?
Talking to Brandon Marcello. Brandon, let's finish this conversation by asking you about the end of the season. It's been a bumpy ride, and I'm not trying to be a biostatistician or anyone else, but the numbers keep going up. Thanksgiving this weekend and between now and Christmas, we've all heard the experts. How do you think that could affect the most critical part of this season, and that is championship Saturday on the 19th, and then conversely, the playoff games on January 1st and January 11th?
Yeah, no, I think a lot of people out there seem to think that we can just push things back with the championship weekend on December 19th and push the playoff back. I don't see that happening. I see December 19th as a drop-dead date for championship games. And if we're not able to play them, it's going to be up to the College Football Playoff Committee to decide among the two teams in that title game, potentially, who makes the playoff. And that can make for some interesting and very heated debates in late December. Of course, they're going to do everything they can in these conferences to play these games. But if they can't, it's going to be up to the College Football Playoff Committee, according to the rules, to pick among the two teams, the top two teams in these conferences with championship games if they cannot play. And then also, when we do get to the playoff, the semifinals and then the championship game, I think there's a real possibility that they need to discuss moving all three of those games into a central location, say like Miami, where the national championship is this year, instead of going across the country with one game here, one game there, and then meeting in Miami for the national championship. I think with the rise in cases the way it is, kids having to go out of town for Thanksgiving and Christmas and then coming back to campuses and then going out of state to these games to practice for several days, it's going to be an issue. And I think they got to create something of a mini bubble environment of sorts for this playoff. And I think it's possible, at least in my mind, that we could see the semifinals and the playoff being played in one central location if COVID-19 cases continue to increase across the country.
Well, the good news, though, is we talked to Bill Hancock last Friday, Brandon. He said everything's fine. Don't worry about it. Let me ask you about tonight. It doesn't seem like the rankings are going to be particularly important because, you know, we still have weeks to go. But what should the average fan be watching for tonight?
Listen, we all know who the top four teams are, and it doesn't matter what order they're going to be in. That's not the drama tonight. To me, the drama is, can Cincinnati sneak into the top six? Because we kind of assume that Texas A&M and Florida might be in that top six. But if Cincinnati somehow gets in there, the Bearcats will have a shot at getting into the playoff if they win out, because teams are going to lose ahead of them, but they've got to stay perfect. Then it also brings up the opportunity of Cincinnati strengthening its resume by, hey, BYU, let's try and play a game December 5th. We both got an open date here. That's the biggest thing to me. It's not necessarily the top four teams. It's who is in that 5 and 6 spot. If it's two SEC teams, I think Cincinnati is not going to have a chance of reaching the playoff this year. But if Cincinnati is in that top six, that'll be the biggest story tonight.
Brandon, you've covered a lot of coaching situations over the years. You covered Auburn, where there was always a coaching controversy. It didn't matter when it was. That's not the coaching controversy right now in the SEC. Muschamp's gone. We know that. Let's talk about who should replace him before we move on to the next issue, which is in Tennessee. Who do you hear is inching up that list of Ray Tanner to take over that program?
You know, Shane Beamer's name comes up a lot. He's a very popular guy in the coaching circles. I think that's part of why you're hearing his name a lot. I'm not so certain he's really a top-of-the-line candidate in South Carolina's eyes. I think the guy everybody's going to be keeping their eyes on is Billy Napier from Louisiana, though I think it's possible that he might be waiting for a bigger job. Not a lot of people are talking about this, but I think Virginia Tech could potentially come open this year, which would certainly affect South Carolina's coaching search at this point. Maybe Steve Sarkisian. I haven't heard his name a lot. I think he's ready to be a head coach again. And he's, you know, we talk about the Saban tree. He's not really part of the Saban tree. He's his own thing with that offense. I think he'd be a good fit at South Carolina and kind of what they need. They need an offensive coach. They need a guy to kind of spice things up. But I think Billy Napier is a name you're going to hear a lot. Hugh Freeze, obviously. We'll see if that cools down a little bit. I'm not so sure that he's campaigning, but people are campaigning for him for that job. But watch Virginia Tech, because that job might come open, and that could really affect where South Carolina goes with its coaching search
Brandon,
over the next few weeks.
I mean, it seemed like it was yesterday that Justin Fuente was the hottest coach in the country.
Yeah, you know, listen, fans of Virginia Tech and some boosters have not been happy with him ever since the end of last year, and they're not doing too hot at this moment, as we all know. And, you know, they lost to Liberty. They struggled last week as well. There's pressure building. The way his contract is set up, the buyout wouldn't be substantially lower next year than it is at this time this year. So I think it's possible that we could see a coaching change at Virginia Tech. There's a lot of upset fans up there and some boosters, and that's something to keep an eye on. Not a lot of people are discussing at this moment.
Finally, you know, speaking of yesterday, Jeremy Pruitt was on an 8-game winning streak a couple of weeks ago, and now he's lost 5 in a row by double digits. And, you know, there are some who think change may be necessary. It's hard to imagine that. I mean, that would be just mind-boggling to me. What do you think is the situation in Knoxville, and what kind of leash is he on?
Well, I don't see how they fire him after this year. They just gave him a contract extension, you know, back in May, and then revealed that, you know, a month before the season. Phil Fulmer, who is tied to the hip with them, just got an extension as well. That was revealed, I think, last week, the deal was. And listen, this is a lesson for all ADs and university presidents across the country. If your coach is not being actively pursued by someone else for a job, do not give them a raise. Do not give them a bigger buyout. Do not give them an outrageous extension. Sure, Jeremy Pruitt deserves something for winning 5-6 straight games near the end of last year. They didn't beat a ranked opponent or anything. No one was knocking on his door asking for his services to be their head coach. I don't understand why college athletic directors and presidents are always held over the fire by these agents. And particularly when this was all being worked out early in this pandemic, when everybody was worried about money, and yet Tennessee said, yeah, let's give him an extension because he beat Indiana in a bowl game. I don't see them firing Jeremy Pruitt this year, but it's very obvious. In year 3, you should not be doing what you're doing at this point. And I think he's on the hottest of hot seats going into next season. And I wonder about Phil Fulmer as well, just as the athletics director, because he's the one who helped work out this deal. And obviously, you know, Fulmer answers to other people and they tell him kind of what to do. But, man, that's just a bad situation. And it's really the ultimate lesson to learn during this entire pandemic when athletics departments across the country are bleeding money. Don't do that, and don't get really excited this year if, say, your team goes to a New Year's Six bowl game with your coach. Chill out. If no one's coming after your coach, he's not going anywhere. So just keep that in mind when you're working out these contracts with a slick voice on the other line and Jimmy Sexton, whoever the agent is trying to get more money out of you.
Brandon Marcello, a lot of great opinions there. Brandon, thank you. We appreciate it. We'll see you very soon. We are heading to a break. Speaking of Tennessee, we will talk to John Adams a little bit later on about the Jeremy Pruitt situation.
no one believes he's going to lose his job this year, but you heard what Brandon said about next year. Not a good way to go into your fourth season. Heading to the break, more to come.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flail.
As the CDC is close to reducing its 14-day quarantine period, if this happens, it would more likely be 7 to 10 days than 14. The interesting part is that the CDC has felt 14 is just too long and people are not obeying it. So 7 to 10 being more realistic, this could have an impact, obviously, on college football if they get it passed in time. Meanwhile, speaking of COVID, this Friday's UAB game against Southern Miss has been postponed or canceled. It's the seventh game this weekend, 91st overall, according to Brett McMurphy. I believe this may be the third or fourth straight weekend that UAB will not play. Speaking of a bizarre season, let's get some more calls here. And James is up next. Hey, James, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Good. Your previous guest answered a couple of my questions. I do believe Tennessee needs to start from the top down with Fulmer and Pruitt. Is COVID that don't have enough time as we just have visits? And I have a couple names I'd like to shout out to possible replacements.
Sure.
Dilfer would be a good coach. I know he's young and he's new to coaching. He's turned Liscombe around very quickly. And also, Matt Patricia, the Detroit Lions, they need to take us back to college, learn a bit more about coaching.
Yeah, I tell you what, James, I apologize for moving in. We were having a hard time with your connection, so maybe if you could call back, we could make some light out of those names. Appreciate the call, though. Dave is in New York. Hey, Dave, go right ahead.
Hey, Paul, thank you for taking my call. First time caller.
Wonderful.
My question is, I'm a big Georgia fan since like the 80s, since Herschel Walker, and every year they're in the rankings of top five, and I want to know why they keep slipping. Every time they have the big game against Alabama or Clemson, they lose, and then they lose their rankings. And my question, my point is, well, how come they never have like a top-notch quarterback, sort of like a Trevor Lawrence or Joe Fields? It's all, I know they're always based on their running backs. They always have good running backs. They're based on their defense.
Well,
I believe he should have had two championships on his belt, but he couldn't make the big plays. I just want to get your opinion.
Well, I mean, first of all, Georgia has had those players in the past. I mean, Matt Stafford was first player taken in the draft. Fromm was well thought of. He replaced a guy that was a five-star quarterback. And, you know, they signed Justin Fields. So, you know, they've had them in the program. It's just been a matter of developing them and making sure that they stayed. Up against a break, more to come, including the situation in Knoxville. We hope you'll stick around.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.